You've heard that time is money. Well, consider this an investment on a way to building wealth that's always right on the money. We're sitting down with local experts that all have a mind for money.
Hello and welcome to A Mind for Money with Citizens Bank. My name is Timmy Standifer, and as always, I am your host. And today with me, we have Jason, and we are going to be talking about mortgages and specifically how they have changed over the years and how the housing market crisis that happened in the late 2000s really drastically have changed how the mortgage process, application, and closing all together look differently because of what had happened. So, you know, if you haven't had a mortgage in over 20 years, it's probably a completely different process than you remember. But yeah, Jason, thank you so much for being here today and talking with us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do here at Citizens?
Sure. My name is Jason Schiller. I am a mortgage sales manager here at Citizens Bank. I've been in mortgage banking for 20 years, started in 2004 after a 10-year stint in mutual funds. So it's been pretty much finance all since college.
Mm-hmm. So he was working in lending before the housing market crisis in the late 2000s and has been clearly since then. So he's seen the change in the lending process pre-late 2000s and post-late 2000s. So he'll be a great resource for us to talk to and pick his brain about what he's seen that's different and maybe some things that are the same. So yeah, let's again just kind of talk about what I've brought up a few times now. So there was a very major economic crisis in the late 2000s. We'll talk about it a little bit more in detail in a little bit. But going back to the beginning of your career, when you first got into lending, I guess what, as a brief overview, what did the lending process look like? Like if someone was going to apply for a mortgage, how fast was it? You know, how many people were involved? Just a general, I guess, overview of, you know, if you're getting from application to closing, you know, what was the general look of it?
You know, time frame wise, it was probably still similar, 30 to 45 days, sometimes quicker if we need to, if it's a purchase. But the big difference was paper. Everything was paper. We had paper W-2s, paper pay stubs, paper loan applications. You know, you literally, in most cases, sat down with the borrower and had them sign the pre-disclosures at your desk the same day of the meeting, and it just doesn't work that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest changes is a lot of applications now start online. Mm-hmm. And even we can get into this a little more later. I mean, you can do them from your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So the drastic change from when I started in this business, iPhones were just coming out.
Yeah.
To now you can do the whole application start to finish. You can even upload your W-2s and pay stubs from your work website into the system and do everything from there. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So even just outside of what is different, you know, maybe documentation wise, how things are documented is completely
that's the other big change.
Different.
Yeah.
If,
you know, when I got started, if you had a good credit score and 20% down, there was actually very little documentation. And then there was even some special programs that, although places I worked really didn't dabble in these, I knew they were out there from some counterparts, you know, the NINA-NI, the no income, no employment, no asset loans, that if you had a credit score over 720 and 20% down, they didn't verify anything, which ultimately were a lot of those loans that ended up going upside down, or the famous stated income loans, where you just said what you made.
Told the bank how much you made, and they went, all right, sounds good to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as we're kind of alluding to already, there were some situations going on in lending that were more lenient than happen now. And with the culmination of where the economy in general was headed in the late 2000s, people losing jobs, losing income, compounded with some of these issues with maybe underqualified applicants being given loans, some issues with some banks doing subprime lending. Do you want to talk a bit about what happened in the late 2000s that, you know, most everyone in the United States know about that era, but kind of on the banking and home loan side, what happened there?
Yeah, I'm going to refer to the movie The Big Short. If you haven't seen that movie, go see it, because it's a really good explanation of what happened. The short version is that a lot of these loans were packaged and bundled and delivered to investors with the very good quality loans, but there was also some very poor quality loans in there. And once those loans started defaulting, that started creating the big downfall and the losses for the financial institutions, and then ultimately the, you know, the collapse of Lehman Brothers and all that stuff, who were backing some of these loans, just led to the big economic crisis that we had. So all those loans that we said earlier, the stated income, you know, that's why those loans aren't around anymore, because I don't believe in the lending area we'll ever go through that again. I certainly hope we don't.
Yeah, and so the lending process was very greatly impacted by this housing crisis, because it was very greatly impacted by lending, some lending issues, like you said, that some loans that weren't going well, that fell through, people were defaulting on because of economic hardship, and then different financial backers not being able to go to make it, and it just kind of snowballed out of control, unfortunately. But since then, there are a lot of new regulations that exist for lenders, for borrowers, that dictate how lenders operate in a loan application status, specifically for consumer loans, for people buying houses. There are very different regulations for businesses, but there are still regulations for business loans. But we're talking about housing loans today and mortgages. So since that economic bubble burst, the housing market issues in the late 2000s, what different things have we seen now as the norm for lending, as far as like regulations or the requirements, because they have become a lot more firm. So what do we see, and it's still constantly changing, but what do we see as kind of the new norms for lending here for mortgages?
Well, the new norm is, one of the things that was created in 2009 was the Dodd-Frank Act, which really, there's so many facets of that, but the long and short of that is proper documentation of the loan, and also for the lending institutions, proper disclosures of rates and or fees. Mm-hmm. What was happening in the subprime world is that on the day of closing, literally at the closing table, there were lenders saying, hey, by the way, we forgot about this $4,000 fee, but don't worry, we rolled it into your loan and your payment's only going to change $20. And they were just basically just stealing from the customer. All the regulations now are laid out. We're held to a tolerance of what we disclose. There's certain fields in what we disclose that cannot change, and there's other ones we're held to a 10% tolerance. So it's held institutions to make them more responsible in what they're quoting to the customer, so they're actually getting a real shot of what their closing fees might be.
Mm-hmm. And the big thing of that, I know, is clarity, and making those documents as legible as possible for a common person who's not, going to be able to look through an entire mortgage and understand the legalese of the whole thing. I know a big thing in the documentation is, and some of the Truth in Lending Act things that have been put into place since then, is loan estimates and the importance of that, and how a loan estimate shows in very plain terms, like you said, the fees that they are likely to pay, and you get the loan estimate early in the process, in the application process, and what your rate is, what it could be within a certain time frame if you're getting an adjustable rate, and what your payment, based on the loan numbers you're looking at, what your payment would be each month. And it's very much bigger numbers and much clearer, so that a common person looking at those few fields can get a grip on what their mortgage is likely going to be.
Right, and it's a very good, it's a much more accurate depiction of what it costs to own a home.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's looking at a $400,000 home and they're putting 5% down. They think, I need $20,000. Well, actually, you probably need about $24,000 or $25,000.
Yep.
You have your homeowner's insurance you have to pay the first year up front. You're going to escrow for taxes and insurance. You have to fund, a couple months of your escrow. And then there's closing fees on your loan, depending on what interest rate you choose and what loan level price adjustments you may or may not have. So all of that is much more clear, and it is, you were right, you hit it. It's designed for the borrower to know what they're walking into at the very early stages. So, our goal is always to have somebody at closing, when they see those final numbers, be like, yep, this is exactly what we talked about. Mm-hmm. There shouldn't be any major surprises in there.
And another big one of those changes is not only creating these new documents and these new regulations for banks to follow, but then specific time frames and guidelines in which the institutions need to get these documents to customers before the closing.
Correct.
So like you said, that they can't come into close, they don't come into closing knowing or not knowing what they're going to be paying for closing documents. The closing disclosure needs to be delivered to a customer bare minimum 3 business days prior to that closing, so they have the appropriate amount of time, look it over, ask any questions.
Right.
And you know, there also is the right of rescission for certain types of loans too, which that's a type of document that a customer, if they're taking money out on their home, if they're getting a cash out, they can they have a certain amount of time where they can look at the documentation even further and ultimately decide, you know, I actually don't want to do this.
Right.
So yeah. And then they could sign that. So there are a lot more opportunities and steps to ensure that institutions aren't doing predatory lending, aren't hiding things, you know, and us as a small financial institution, local institution, not something that we struggled with at the time of the right. housing crisis or anything too. It, you know, it was a lot of the much larger lending institutions that were doing these predatory lending habits. But it did still, you know, obviously the regulations still affect us and how we operate then right. in the lending world. And so, you know, there are a lot of changes that we already talked about. And as we talked about, it obviously clearly benefits the customer. Can you go over some of the benefits that these regulations, some of the benefits these regulations have for both the customer and the lending institution?
I think the biggest one is that we're all on the same page. Everybody knows what's happening or should know what's happening the entire time. They should know what they fully expect to pay at a closing, if it's a purchase, and a refinance, if they're pulling money out, they should fully know what they're going to get back. Not that the numbers should change all that often. I mean, really, on a refinance, the only number that should change is the odd day's interest, depending on what day of the month you close. So that's been a benefit. I think we're probably going to lead into this a little bit, but there's also some, not disadvantages, but you know, in some cases, it's been tougher to qualify.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something, you know, to consider too. Is, you know, while a lot of these regulations are existing, to some additional benefit to both the customer and the lender is, with these restrictions and regulations, you do need to be more qualified to get these loans. So there have been less foreclosures, a lot less foreclosures,
right, yeah,
way less, you know, they still exist, but foreclosures have gone way down in the last 10 years. And as compared to the early to mid, especially late 2000s, because that was a big thing that was happening when people were defaulting on those loans, is the house got foreclosed on, the people had to leave the homes, and then the banks then took ownership back of those homes, had to resell them. You know, that's not something banks want to do.
No,
you know, banks aren't in the business.
Exactly.
Banks aren't in the business of selling the property. They're there to finance it.
Right.
So that is an additional benefit that has existed for both borrowers and lenders, is since the requirements to qualify have gone up and are more strict, the foreclosures are way down, which is good on both ends. But like we were leading into here, since requirements are higher, how does that change what it looks like for customers to get a loan? Is it harder? And it sounds like, you know, we're clearly saying it is. How much harder is it for someone to get a loan?
Well, when I say it's harder, I'm going to preface it with, you know, fixed rate, 30-year and 15 or 20-year fixed rate loans. You know, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, those types of deals have very strict guidelines. And where it has mainly gotten harder, although it could apply to somebody in a non-self-employment situation, but self-employed borrowers have a much tougher time getting a loan. They, you know, as previously, as I said, they could state their income, or if they had a certain percentage down and a good credit score, they didn't need to supply tax returns. Now they need, you know, 2 years business and personal tax returns. And if there's declining income, if the underwriter thinks that income has declined enough, and that's completely really up to the underwriter, there's no set percentage, They can deny the loan and say, we can't use this income. And the biggest struggle is you get, you know, somebody making $300,000 a year, and then they're making $200,000 a year, even though that's still a great income, and they're probably going to be just fine from an underwriting
50% decline.
Correct. Yeah. From an underwriting standpoint, your income
33%,
dropped. Yeah. Dropped. And that's a risk.
Yeah.
Now to you and me sitting here, we're like, that's crazy. 200,000, yeah. They're going to be fine. That's where a bank like us, you know, that's when we would do what we call a portfolio loan, which is a loan just kind of outside the box. We do them as an ARM, you know, a 3 or 5, maybe a 7, depending on the risk associated with it. And we can get around some of those things. But it's been harder for some of the fixed rate loans to get approved. Another big, what I call like a zinger or a stinger, is you'll have somebody, you know, who's works at the bank, but then, you know, say somebody sells candles or something on the side, and they're writing off, you know, 20 grand worth of losses on their Schedule C. Well, that comes off your income.
Yep.
And a lot of people forget about that. So that can hurt you.
That's a big thing. And especially being in smaller town Wisconsin, and when I was lending, that was something I ran into a lot, is people who are self-employed. And, you know, when you're talking to your accountant, their best advice is, write everything off. You know, you want that income that the government sees to be as little as possible, because then you're getting tax at least. Because self-employed income is pretty high.
Right.
You know, you're paying a lot of taxes on your self-employment income tax is very high, is what I meant to say.
Right.
So, you know, that most self-employed people are trying to get that bottom line income to be lower. But what we are required to use, especially for, like you said, the fixed rate Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, we are required to use whatever income you report to the government on your tax returns is the only income we can use as lendable income.
That's your income. Right.
So, you know, even if in practice you have more money than it seems like, you know, the tax returns would say, and you may have a lot of, you know, cash sitting around, but you, cash at home isn't provable to us, unfortunately. You know? And if your tax return says you only make $10,000 a year, that's all we can say you make, because that's what the government sees, and that's the only verifiable income we have is your tax returns. And that's all part of the lending regulations that exist to make to try to avoid situations like happened in the early 2000s, where people were being borrowed to when they shouldn't have been. So that is a big struggle for self-employed people, and that's typically the new era recommendation to self-employed people who want to buy at some point soon, is make sure you are reporting your income accurately and
start planning
and making sure that you're reporting that, you know, you do actually make money. So that the bank can then actually see that you make money. Or, you know, you get a lot of people in this area who maybe do some side jobs and maybe don't report as much money as they should.
Yeah,
and they say, oh, well, I make 30 grand a year in the off season plowing snow. Well, that's great. Government doesn't know.
Right.
I don't know. You know, that's all well and good, but that means nothing to the bank, unfortunately. We can't use that because it's not reported in any capacity. Everything has to be above board. It all has to be, which is good in the long run for the bank too, because it protects us.
And it does protect the consumer.
It does,
the last thing we want to do, as you said, we're not in the real estate business. Mm-hmm. We don't, contrary to what people think, we do not want to foreclose on your house.
Foreclosures are not fun for anyone.
Right.
It costs us money. They're not fun for the bank. It
costs them money. We want to make sure that you can make that payment.
Mm-hmm.
And
as a lender, the least fun thing you ever do is calling someone who's late on their loan and asking, hey, you know, how's it going? Can we figure something out?
Right. Yeah.
That's the least fun thing you can, that's less fun than denying a loan. I know from experience.
I'd rather deny the loan
up front than have to be calling a few months in and asking if they're doing okay. So, you know, we've talked about, a lot of changes, and you mentioned different things like the Dodd-Frank Act. I've brought up Truth in Lending. There's tons of different regulations, lettered all, you know, all through the alphabet that affect lending. You know, you may have heard, you know, Reg E, Reg Z. There's tons of different regs out there that all do different things. But out of these rules and regulations, how have some of them changed from when they were first implemented, and you know, maybe what are some of the newer ones that, you know, actually something that is different we can maybe talk about a little bit. They're actually loosening some of these regulations a little bit, I think it's partially due to the cost of living being so high, and doing it, just houses cost so much, so it's so hard to qualify and stuff. And I know in the last couple of years, some of these federal regulations have gotten a little bit looser. You know, they still are pretty strict. But yeah, if you want to talk about maybe some of the changes that you've seen over the years, and maybe new regulations that have come, maybe some that existed and have left.
Yeah, some of the changes, they've, you know, if you change jobs, you know, they used to want a longer history of that. And now if you, an example as a teacher, you go from one district to another and you have a signed contract, you know, and saying your income's $15,000 more at this new district, they're going to use that number right away versus in years past, they had want to see more of a history. And again, that sometimes was subjective. You know, a long time ago, they used to want to see a 2-year history, and that has greatly lessened now. You can pretty much deliver a loan sometimes even with a trailing pay stub, meaning you're not going to start your job, or you've started your job right before close, but you're not going to get a stub for 4 weeks yet because you got to work 2 weeks, then wait for the 2-week leg to get your check. And there's all sorts of, you know, back things we have to do on that type of stuff. But there's a lot more possibilities for people in a little bit different situations. And you alluded to it earlier, you know, the TRID rule, the 3-day rule on both disclosures and before closing, that, you know, everything's up front so that there are no surprises. That's the biggest change of everything, is we want to make sure there's no surprises.
Yeah, that TRID stuff is on the newer end, even compared to a lot of the
Dodd-Frank stuff.
If I remember, it was late 2010s that a lot of that stuff started becoming regulation. I think right around the time I started working in mortgage documentation, that TRID stuff was really getting put into play. But it's another one that does help both sides and make sure the bank has their stuff together in time. And honestly, as a lender, it was nice to know everything was good several days before closing. You know, you weren't having to scramble last second to make sure your paperwork was ready the morning of, when you have customers coming in to close in a couple hours. You know, you were able to look it over and have it. And then if you had questions as the lender on documents, you got to clear that up well before the closing, because that happens sometimes. You know, sometimes things have changed, or, you know, maybe someone in the back office had to change the way something was getting charged on closing, or we had to pay for a fee because of something not getting disclosed right at first. You know, there might be questions that you have that you want to make sure you have plenty of time to reach out to the people who work in the backside of the lending and get things clarified for yourself as a lender, because you got to be able to explain that then to the customer.
Right.
So, you know, that lead time stuff does help, and I did like it as a lender as well to know that there were time frames that you had to hit, and then you had some cool off time in between to make sure everything was good before you really you stepped in the room with the customer to do the closing, because that's where, you know, you really got to know everything and be ready to answer all the questions.
And you want it to be as less, I mean, you want to take the stress off. I mean, usually, you know, I will say we're better than most. Our closing package is only this thick compared to some who are that thick.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's stressful enough. They're probably, if it's a purchase, they're moving and they got all sorts of things in their mind. If you can make that 20 to 30 minutes of closing less stressful by being upfront and having no surprises, that's our goal, and that's what we aim to do.
Yeah, and it helps if they have questions, they have time to process the documents before they're sitting there. Like you said, million things going through their head. They got to move. They got to get their stuff in the new house. They can think about the loan questions prior to that day so that they can hopefully sit down and have them ready for you either before closing or at closing, and you can get them clarified.
Right, which is kind of a technological change from even pre-COVID, you know. Some of this stuff was developing. I think COVID really kind of kicked it in the butt.
It did, yeah.
You know, customers are getting almost all of their documents in a PDF or an online link before closing to view everything that they're about to sign in 2 or 3 days, which is amazing, because a lot of times when they get the closing, they're like, no, we read all this, so let's go. I mean, I've had closings be 12 minutes long on a purchase.
Yeah, it's definitely nice. And, you know, not having to mail signatures back and forth, you know, electronic
FedEx, consent. Waiting for the FedEx to come.
And that's something the next thing we're going to talk about is how technology really has changed the mortgage process, and especially with there being a lot of documents needed, just how much faster it makes everything. And I think that is one of the best benefits that we have going forward in lending and as customers, so much of it can be done without having to step in to the bank or mailing things. And again, you alluded to it also, but what have you seen in the loan world with the use of technology? How have you seen that change the process? Whether it makes it easier or harder in some ways?
I think it's way easier for both the customer and us as well as our process. I remember when I got into lending, there was a manila folder file, this thick with everything, with everything in it. And granted, our backroom staff have a lot more screens on their desk now, but everything's paperless. Everything's scanned in. We don't have a mortgage paper file anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's the hugest change, but it's also made it easier. Even from the customer standpoint of when they're dealing with their accountant, if we need tax returns, the accountant can directly send us to that securely and upload it. We're not waiting for documents.
Getting a 100-page
tax return.
Tax return as a PDF is a lot better than having them bring it in and scan it in and upload it.
And not only do they bring it in, it'll have the thick staple that you can't get out, and then it tears the corners, and then it gets jammed in the scanner, and you want to pull your hair out. So, all of that stuff has just made things so streamlined. I literally, and like I said, on their phone now with the new, software we have, people can just, a couple of clicks on their phone and have it uploaded and imported into the system. Mm-hmm. And then we can, this has been around for a while, but an automated underwriter response, mm-hmm. we get an accept from Freddie Mac or an approve eligible from Fannie Mae, mm-hmm. and it'll say, make sure these things are in the file and your loan's good to deliver to us. That saves time for everybody. Mm-hmm. The underwriters still obviously have to check and make sure the documentation is accurate, but
We have our in-house underwriters who verify that everything is in the loan accurately, so that when it's sent to Freddie, it is actually as it should
be. Right, everything lines up. Mm-hmm. So that's probably from an underwriting standpoint. They used to have to manually calculate all that. And I'm sure we still do to a point to double check things, but there's even systems out there in the automated underwriting process that can almost quote unquote auto decision the deal, mm-hmm. a lot like car loans are now.
Oh yeah.
The mortgage world is heading that way where there's even technology out there where you can verify someone's income and employment right through the loan software.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm. all the verifications
right,
for you.
They send all the verifications and the customer, especially when the customer applies online, there's moments where you don't even really meet the customer till the closing table.
Yeah, and granted, a lot of my lending was hard of COVID and coming out of COVID, but I had tons of files where I didn't meet the person until we were sitting down to close for the first time.
Yep.
And that's just how it goes, and that's how some people want to do it, and I was fine doing it that way if that's how people wanted to do it, or if people wanted to come in and meet and we start that way, that's totally fine too. And that's the nice thing that we have as a local institution is you can do it either way.
And there's even a third way, which I really started utilizing in the last 2 years, is either Teams or Zoom, mm-hmm. or some have Skype, whatever they use. We've done some of those meetings, or if somebody wanted their financial planner involved, mm-hmm. In a meeting with us, sometimes the people would come in, we'd Zoom in or Teams in their financial planner, but it's the way where we can really get everyone involved, and the technology just makes it easy. We don't have to mm-hmm. have five people in a conference room anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's another big change that is really nice to use.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the mortgage world is going to be ever changing. That's just inevitable.
Yeah, there'll probably be something we'll have to do different next year.
Yep, and there's always new regulations, new laws, but new advancements too, which makes it nicer. Yes, there are harder restrictions, but I think it's pretty inarguable that lending and doing a mortgage today is a lot easier than it was 20 years ago when you're filling out an entire loan application by hand, every line of the URLA, and getting that all filled out and handwritten, which now can all just be typed in into whatever loan software you have or the online application in 5 to 10 minutes.
Right.
And you have a whole generated application.
I would say back in 2004 when I got started, a loan appointment was probably an hour and a half, 2 hours. And now you're right. If you're proficient with a computer or your phone, you can do a loan application in 10 minutes, have it submitted,
And then upload your pay stubs and W-2s.
Upload your stuff, and you can probably have an automated decision, at least an early decision, within hours, if you know, depending on people's schedules and that. And so that's a huge change. I mean, it used to be a week before you even got the file to the underwriter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a, you know, it's a fast paced environment for lending. I mean, especially with how fast houses have been moving off the market, and so that is partially a product of that, but partially a product of just technology being available. But yeah, Jason, before we close out, do you have any other closing thoughts or anything you thought about that you wanted to touch on, and just in lending and what you see, and maybe things you're excited for lending in the future? Or
I'm excited. I always joke about this. I'm excited for rates to come down, but rates are rates.
Yeah.
You know, these rates are historically still very good rates, because
that is the funny thing.
We're in the mid sixes up to the mid sevens, depending on your credit score. These are still historically good rates.
Yeah.
There are people still buying houses. I would argue that deals are tougher to find than they were, you know, 5 years ago. But that's just the cycle we're in right now. Rates may not fall for another 2 or 3 years. You know, you always hear these people saying,
you never know,
the rates are going to get cut. And here's one thing I do want to clarify. I hear this every day. The Fed says they're going to cut the rate. That's not mortgage rates.
Yeah.
Granted, that can very much indirectly or directly influence mortgage rates, but that is not the mortgage rate. That is the Fed's fund rate that affects the prime rate, and that affects credit cards and consumer loans, not mortgage loans.
Yeah. And it's all a trickle effect. Yes, they may be involved, like you said, more heavily in some cases. Sometimes they do move more in conjunction. Sometimes they don't move together at all.
Correct.
I mean,
it's been completely the opposite.
In my experience being in banking the last 10 years, you know, it's mortgage rates seem to move sooner than Fed rates, at least in recent years, it can. And it's not always the case. It's its own entity. So, you know, you hear people saying, oh, you know, prime's going to come down 0.5%. Well, rates already dropped a month ago. You know, maybe they're not going to move at all, you know, or maybe their rates are going up right now. You never know, because mortgage rates really are their own animal. There is, yes, some correlation, but it's not, like you said, it's not an exact one-to-one. It's not like how it affects credit card rates.
Right.
You know, prime rate can affect some loan rates, but not necessarily, you know, fixed rate.
Not
the fixed rate mortgages.
More the fixed rate stuff. Another quote that, you know, myself and several of the realtors I know use a lot is, marry your house, date your rate.
Because
the rate may not be there.
Yep, you can refinance. You can, you know, there's lots of things you can do. The rate may go down, you know, may go up, and you may have a good rate after a while. You never know. And the other thing is, too, when you buy a house, you don't have to live in a house forever, too. You know,
that's right.
That's the other thing, too. You know, I mean, buying a house is tough nowadays, but if you own a house, you have some equity in it right now. You could sell it and get another one. You know, that's a tough decision, but moving's not fun. But no. you can do it. It's
especially
not like
as you get older.
Yeah, and it's not like if you buy it, you have to stay there forever too. So I think that's something that can trip some people up too, is when they, you know, when they think about buying, they're like, this has to be where I live forever. I mean, not really. You can move. You can buy I think the idea of like a starter house and then moving up in life has become less common as availability of homes and the inventory has gone down.
Now it's
so,
like a 10-year house.
Yeah, now, I mean, people are looking at being there a little longer, which I get. It is practical to think in that sense. There is, you know, it's not you're not finitely locked somewhere just because you bought it, you know.
Right.
And so I think that that's something that kind of scares people too, because I know a lot of people my age who really like renting, and even though rent prices are expensive and kind of suck right now, but they like the idea of they don't feel locked in somewhere. And I get that too, but you know, with how easy selling a house is right now, you could sell your house and go back to renting if you really wanted to. I mean, capital gain is something to consider, and that's a whole different thing. Depends how long you've lived there and stuff.
Consult your financial advisor.
A tax accountant or a financial advisor for stuff like that. But there's a lot to consider when looking at where you want to live. And I think that the way the world works now, it's a lot easier to get out of your living situation and into a new one with how online everything is too. I think that helps because it's easier to find new places. I think, you know, 10, 15 years ago, even when the internet was so much younger, it was so much harder to find available places. But, you know, I could look up right now and find apartments all over the nation if I wanted to, or houses all over the nation if I wanted to, and start applying or start putting in offers if I was in a place to do that versus, you know, 15 years ago, you got to go drive around the neighborhood. You got to go get the local realtors handouts, you know, things like that. So it is a totally different world, and it's an interest. You have a very different thought process, I think, generationally when people look at homes, which is just it's a whole different discussion. But it's just something interesting to think about, and in the way that home ownership is viewed as well. That's affected by a lot of stuff. But
yeah, everything's always evolving.
Yeah. So
we'll see what the future holds and both real estate and mortgage lending. And the good thing is we're local community. We're always going to have experts on hand to answer all your questions.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you have any questions on loans or lending or mortgages, you can give Jason a call. You can reach out to any of our great loan officers at Citizens Bank. If you have any questions on what we talked about today, you can reach out to me directly with any questions, any suggestions, any feedback, maybe episodes you would like to hear about, experts you would like to hear from. You can email me directly at heytimmy@amindformoney.com. That's heytimmy@amindformoney.com. And Jason, we thank you again for coming out and chatting with us and having a good conversation about mortgage lending and just mortgages and housing in general. And again, we thank you all for watching and listening, and hope you have a great rest of your day.